He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager, Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And it looks like our Fed must have said something to appease Wall Street here for a day or two. It has stopped the slide in the market. We were looking to kind of perched on a cliff there earlier in the week, but at least we're holding now. The Dow is up 77 so far. We're at 37,980, holding some key support levels there, but barely. S&P 500 is up just 7 points, 50.25 right now. The NASDAQ is up 45 after a very good report from Qualcomm. NASDAQ's up 47, puts it at 15,653. The Russell 2K doing best of all. It's up 0.625% this morning. Crude oil is down 10 cents. Continued weakness there. Clear down to 78.90, and that is a barometer for the global economy. Gold continues to slide. It's down $11 per ounce to $2,300. Silver's down 26 cents to $26.49. The 10-year is up, let's see, that would be 4 basis points this morning to 4.64. So he didn't do much to help the bond market. And Bitcoin is up 1,200 to 58,640. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. And we've got, a decent open to the market today. Now, Barry, I found it kind of interesting yesterday. The good news, I suppose, coming out of the Fed decision and then the press conference, that there were no plans for a rate hike. Now, I didn't find that to be all that dovish, did you?
No, I mean, you know, I think what the market was worried about is that there was going to be, I think it was going to be a bit more hawkish in terms of, you know, that say, you know, rate hikes are on the table or what have you. When he answered that question, watched the press conference yesterday. It was a pretty boring one. And then the statement, what they changed in the written statement was basically one sentence. In doing so, essentially, stated that, that the economic growth has been stronger than they anticipated, and of course that inflation was, to finish inflation was going to take longer.
Yeah,
which is kind of, which is
not good news.
It's more of a, it's soft landing, or, it kind of reminds me of just one of those just gliding, right? Above, you think it's going to, you're waiting for the wheels to hit, and it just continues to move on. But
you know, the market did like rally when
it, it
he
did
said
think
that.
It was good news, right? It was, I think it was partly because, economic, earnings, will be in place, potentially for longer, right? And then also, that we're not going at least in the other direction, where, potentially they're going to recorrect and go back, do a rate hike.
Yeah. And I guess the other part of it was that they're going to slow down their unwinding of their balance sheet, which they've been selling a lot of bonds into the market, and that keeps rates high itself. They need liquidity to sell those bonds. So, anyways, that's
right.
Been driving rates up.
Right, and if they slow, there's a couple. The speeding up of selling the balance sheet floods the bond. Floods the market, and bond prices go down, and yields go up. And if they slow it down, right, that the runoff will then, in that case, they're trying to actually
stabilize the market
and or reducing rates to a certain extent, right, potentially. So
okay, and then but by the end of the day, all right, it went way up and then it went way down, and by the end of the day, the Nasdaq was down 52 points, and the Dow was up a mere 87. The S&P yesterday was down 17 points. So at the end of the day, it wasn't that great of a reaction to what he had to say. AMD was the big loser yesterday. SMCI was also a big loser yesterday. So we still have a pretty nervous tech sector, I would say. Okay, so now, all right. They got to get that inflation down to 2%, obviously. That's their goal. He suggested that they don't have enough confidence that inflation was headed towards the 2% target yet. And that probably was about it from yesterday's Fed meeting. Now, on the earnings front, that's going to be real important here. Today, Apple will report after the close. You know what? I expect a stinker of a report. I could be wrong, but I just haven't seen much fervor around that their latest version of the iPhone.
Well, in China, right, in terms of China's, that's got to be a, you know, that's a down number. The question is how much of a down number, right, that could make for the stinker, right?
And I just don't expect much. I mean, they're going to start pumping AI, I think, is what Apple's got to do. Their next one's going to have generative AI in it.
Yeah, they're going to kind of need to almost, you know, and Cook really hasn't been great at this. You really need to jawbone, right, the story on AI before
you
see
it. He needs to hire Musk.
Well, yeah,
his public relations guy.
Right, you need to talk it up even before you see it in the in the financials. Right, you're not. I mean, it's going to be a while before you see it in the financials.
Musk starts talking about it 2 years before it even is on the assembly line. Right.
Yeah, I mean it's time to start the narrative. That was kind of what I thought. Jensen did. With NVIDIA, very well early on, and then plus also had, the front line, the first ones who were going to have that revenue boost and see it.
Yeah.
But, AMD was a little more, has been a little more quiet. She's been a little more quiet.
She's under-delivered, okay?
Yeah.
There's no question about it. Okay, so now here's one of the issues with getting the inflation down to 2%. Initial jobless claims unchanged. Well, it's like a broken record. I could just replay that 208 every Thursday.
I just guessed 208. Is that I think it was around there. Yeah,
you and I are better predictors of that than the economists are, because it's just been a broken record. I mean, 208,000 is all the people that filed for unemployment last week. That continues to be a very high or a very low number. And that keeps a tight labor market, that keeps wages higher, and that keeps inflation in place. In addition to that, productivity rises less than expected, and labor costs rise more in Q1. That's why you're seeing interest rates up today.
Yeah, that was the most disappointing part of, I think, of the of that productivity report, because I've kind of been talking about it lately. In fact, it was moving in the right direction. Finally, we had some of the most, I think, productive months, really since pre-COVID levels. And then, of course, you get a pullback today, less productivity, and paying folks more, right?
Yeah, so that's not good. That's the worst of both worlds.
Not good for inflation, right?
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I've been more productive than I have been in a long time.
I feel productive.
Yes, I do, too. U.S. job cuts announced in April declined 28%. Okay, that's another hawkish kind of thing. Companies aren't laying off. That's keeping the labor market tight. That's keeping earnings up. And that's keeping that inflation. Now, here's your weird story of the day. I always like to have a weird story of the day. Second Boeing-linked whistleblower dies after 2 weeks in critical condition. Now, the first one was not too far from where we live, just across the Ashley River there.
Like a parking lot, right?
Yeah, where supposedly the guy commits suicide, the whistleblower. And now the second one, who was supposedly in great health, Josh Dean, lived in Wichita, Kansas. He's died after 2 weeks in critical condition. He had provided testimony in a shareholder lawsuit against Spirit, and also filed the complaint with the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration that claimed serious and gross misconduct by senior quality management of the 737 production line. He was also a client of the South Carolina law firm that also represented Boeing whistleblower John Mitch Barnett, who was found dead in an apparent suicide.
No, both of them were represented by the same whistleblower.
Yes. Okay. Wow. So look, it could be just a coincidence. I don't know.
It sounds like a John Grisham book.
Oh, but we need to get, who's the guy that lives down in Siesta Key, the famous writer lives right there.
Stephen King.
Stephen King lives right there. I don't know if he writes about that kind of stuff.
We need John Grisham for this, I think.
Yeah, that is just weird stuff. Okay, now when we come back, I like this one. I'm thinking about staying in Prince's Purple Rain House when I go to Minnesota here. That's an Airbnb story when we get back. This is the Best Docs Now show. To the second quarter of today's show. We've got, kind of a tepid response, really, to the Fed speak yesterday. At least it wasn't put the hammer down, we're coming at you with a rate hike if things don't settle down. Okay, it wasn't that. But at the same time, it wasn't, we still see a rate cut right before the election. Well, we didn't hear that either, so
yeah,
it's just tepid, really. It's a non-event from my perspective yesterday.
Which is probably a good thing. I mean, from a Fed standpoint, the fact that the markets stayed fairly stable, right, even though there was some gyration, as you mentioned, intraday. After the during and after the press conference up to close, but it was they'd probably take it right compared to talking the market up one way or the other. So.
Well, Airbnb has got some interesting possibilities here. You can spend a night in the Ferrari Museum. That would be kind of fun. Although I don't know about the smell of burnt rubber and oil, but the Ferrari Museum, have it all to yourself. You can stay in one of Disney's classic Pixar's most iconic homes. You can stay in Prince's Purple Rain House. I'm not sure where that is. I don't think it's in Minnesota. But anyways,
are ideas. I think it's on the outskirts of St. Paul or Minneapolis.
Well, next time I go, maybe I'll stay there, and you guys can stay over there at the Radisson Blue. Okay, the big earnings report for me last night. Actually, it was early this morning because the company is headquartered in the Netherlands. And in fact, phone on silence, and I think around 3 a.m. I go, there's breaking news. Novo Nordisk reported earnings. And the stock is down a smidge. I really like the chart.
Was great.
I thought the report was excellent. NVO, which is now I don't know. Let's see. I got to look up LVMU.
I think it's still the largest. LVMH.
Yes, it is. It's got LVMH by about 50 billion. Novo Nordisk lifts guidance as Ozempic, Wegovy. So Ozempic is the diabetes side of the drug. Wegovy is the weight loss side of the drug. Their sales absolutely surged. So let's just take a look. I mean, it's real easy. Let's take a look at this recent quarter and see if this is a soggy stock at all. No, doesn't look too soggy to me. Their sales were up 41% year over year. Okay, and as I look at the last four quarters, their sales are accelerating, the sales growth. They've gone from 24% growth to 37% growth to 39% growth to 41% growth. Take that, Pfizer.
And owning both of them, it's a great pair. I mean,
I own both of them.
Yeah, Lilly and Novo Nordisk. They're both, you know, kind of gobbling
they're
up market share
against
right?
each other.
Yeah.
Now their earnings have gone up in the last four quarters: 39%, 54%, 69%, and 68%. So maybe if you're trying to find a hole in the story, saying that well, the acceleration in growth has leveled off in that 68% area. And I also did read that they're having to drop their price a little bit because of, you know, the increased competition. And they're expecting further price reductions this year. Their CFO said on a conference call with reporters that the products were slightly down, the prices slightly down last quarter. Now, how has the stock done over the years? And remember, Novo Nordisk, I chose 52 stocks to write about in my book way back in 2013. Novo Nordisk was one of those stocks back then because they dominated the diabetes market, okay? So, over the last 10 years, the S&P has delivered 16.7% per year. Novo is 19.3. Now that's, you know, 5 years without the weight loss drug, or 6 years. Over the last 5 years, Novo has delivered to stock owners with no guarantees about the future. This is a past performance. 39% per year, while the market's 14%. So almost tripling the returns of the S&P 500. Now get this. Okay, this is really the Wegovy years. Over the last 3 years, stockholders have been rewarded with 52% annual returns on their money, and their holdings, versus 6.7 for the S&P 500. And then over the last 12 months, you've got 54% versus 22%. So the Gunderson formulas give it, when I compare it against all the other stocks in the market, it gets an A+ performance grade. So, you know, it sits at the front of the head of the class, right, in the front row there, with the elite performance stocks, with no guarantee to future performance, obviously. But, you know, you like to see a good, strong track record. You know, we've looked at Pfizer recently. We've looked at Merck. We've looked at Johnson & Johnson, and they've all delivered meager performance to investors. And a Novo Nordisk has been superior. Now, that's looking in the past.
Yeah. Well, you know it's important whenever the only, the main thing is, how fast can you make it, right?
Yes.
That's where the slowdown
is. Yeah, and a little
to,
bit of competition
price,
now
right, yeah.
coming into it. They have a little bit of maybe a price war.
Right, exactly.
But still, they dominate the market, and they will for a while. Okay, now we go to the valuation, which is forward-looking. That's where my experience as an analyst comes in. And creating a five-year target price based on what we know now. I mean, it's public information. It's the consensus earnings estimates, which come from various sources. You can get them from Zacks. You can get them from Econ Refinitiv. You can get them from FactSet Research. You can get them from MarketSmith. And then, of course, applying the five-year growth rate, which is also the analyst estimates out there on the street. And my valuation right now on the shares, 5 years from now, what can happen over the next 5 years, I still show it with 90% upside potential, 90%. So it's still in my buy range from a valuation point of view. I like 75-80% or more upside, and it still has that. It has the performance, and I think personally my target price would put it at $1 trillion stock 5 years from now. It's currently at just under $600 billion. So that's a good report from Novo Nordisk. It's an excellent chart. I think the price probably rattled it a little bit, and that's why the stock is down 2.2%. But we disclosed that it's one of our biggest positions. It's also a dividend payer, so it's in both of our growth portfolios and in our dividend and growth portfolio, NVO. When we come back, we'll talk about Qualcomm, which also reported after the close. They're becoming an important player in AI. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now shows. We're about 65% of the way through earnings season. Every quarter, I talked to my friend yesterday. He's one of the main guys in the accounting department for a publicly traded company here in South Carolina, Barry. Blackbaud. He was on the earnings call yesterday telling me all about being there and the questions they ask and everything.
Find the firing line right there.
These big companies really dominate the market these days. All the growth in the S&P 500 is coming from really about a handful, maybe the upper 5-10% of the whole S&P, and everybody else has just pretty much been flatlining for years with no earnings growth whatsoever. Well, Qualcomm, I'm going to call it the stock of the day, QCOM. I have a long, long history with Qualcomm because it's probably San Diego's biggest company, publicly traded company. That and Semper Energy, I guess. Qualcomm, they were the ones that came up with the chosen technology for cell phones way back when, CDMA, I'm thinking around the late 90s, mid-90s, somewhere in there. Their technology was chosen over the competitors' technology. And so they've been a key part of the cell phone revolution. I just think, Barry, back I used to when I was
in your old
high
stadium.
School,
stadium was named at
it
Qualcomm
was named
Stadium.
Qualcomm.
Right?
Yeah. But back in the day, I'd get done with football practice at high school, and it's starting to be getting dark. I couldn't text my mother and say, "Where are you? I've been waiting here for 3 hours, and nobody's come to pick me up. Are you coming to pick me up, or am I up for adoption, or what?" But nowadays, I don't know if it's a better thing. I don't know that we're a better society having these cell phones, as I see these kids staring at them
constantly.
In terms
of being connected, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
Disconnected would really be the right term.
We got to learn how to live with them, and that's the way it is. And I have grandchildren, 10 years old, begging, 8 years old, begging for a cell phone. Everybody else at school has one, and their parents just don't think it's good for them at this age to have a cell phone yet. It's different for every family. But Qualcomm is breaking out here to a new 52-week high after an excellent report. Qualcomm is a recent purchase that we made because we feel like, and you're hearing it from Apple, that it's just a matter of time before AI comes sweeping through the mobile phone. And believe me, the mobile phone is where it's at. If you're not advertising on mobile, you're missing 80% of the audience out there. Mobile is very, very important. And so Qualcomm and wireless cell phone, that's almost synonymous with each other, and also Apple there in the middle. Qualcomm had a big report. Their sales were up only 1%, but I think they're kind of on the runway here to take off, and they are taking off. And I just feel like it's a sleeper play on AI, a non-NVIDIA play. They certainly have a better report here today than AMD had yesterday, which AMD is mostly in PCs, and Qualcomm is mostly in cell phones. Qualcomm tops expectations. Now, Qualcomm does not have that great of a track record because they kind of went, I think well, this has given them new life, right?
Yeah, they go in fits and starts, and we wrote about them, I guess, probably about, let's say, roughly around 3 years ago. Remember when they had the 5G tailwind,
right?
And so, you know, 5G networks were taking off, obviously 5G chips, you know, now all of our cell phones are 5G or higher.
Yeah.
But before, that was that kind of big tailwind, and now, you know, they kind of had a lull there, and now this, you know, AI is kind of this next phase of growth there.
Yeah, so, I mean, it plays out here. If you look at the past track record, over the last 10 years, Qualcomm has delivered to clients about 7.6%, not clients, owners. While they've done half of what the S&P has done, S&P 16.7. Now you go over the last 5 years, it's been a market performer. Over the last 3 years, it's trailed the market, 5% versus 7% for the S&P. Now remember, that three-year return is including now the 2022 year where the Fed went on the warpath and the NASDAQ was down 30%. But lately, this is what I'm looking at, lately, Qualcomm's up 41% over the last 12 months. And the S&P is up 21%, so it's doubled the returns all of a sudden. Like I say, it's got new life. And my valuation on it, it really kind of depends on that growth rate. I'm kind of conservative. I'm at 11% per year over the next 5 years. I'm hoping they can achieve that. I have 85% upside potential on Qualcomm. You know, a lot of that is iffy, but that's what we know now about the stock. That's the public information out there on the street that I'm crunching.
And you got to gauge that execution risk, right?
Yes, and I would say that the chart is excellent. Okay, couldn't be better. It's a $200 billion company. So we're happy with our Qualcomm today. Now, I also always talk about the ones that don't do well for us. DoorDash is disappointing today, very disappointing. I think DoorDash's challenge, their earnings estimates for this year are $2.90. Next year, $3.81, and they still have not reached profitability. Okay, they lost 6 cents in the first quarter. So to get to $2.90 by the end of the year, they're going to have three big quarters in a row. So that's why the stock is down 13.5%. For me, DoorDash is a play on changing demographics. You know, they were in the right place at the right time when COVID came along. And, you know, I think that a lot of the habits have stuck that we developed during COVID. You know, every restaurant I ever go to these days, I always see sacks stapled together, ready for the DoorDash or whoever Uber Eats to come by. For me, you know, I like going to a restaurant and having a waitress or waiter being served. I pay a pretty hefty tip to people, so you do save a lot of money by having it delivered. But, you know, I like the whole experience of going to a restaurant, the atmosphere, the music, the smells, the people watching, it all. Something about a brown sack on your doorstep but you're basically buying into the restaurant industry, all the restaurants, okay? And DoorDash is just kind of a pick and shovel company. But disappointing that they have not turned a profit. Their sales were up 23%. They lost 41 cents a year ago. They only lost 6 cents this year. So you could say, well, that's 85% growth in earnings, but there are no earnings yet. But it's an 85% improvement in earnings. But you know what? They've got to turn profitable here. They need to string together three big quarters in a row after a disappointing first quarter. We do own it. It's down 13.6% today. And it is a large cap, 40. It's kind of a small large cap. I would call it more of a mid cap now. It's $45 billion. Okay, then the last one is a good old American name, Cummins Engines. Okay, out of, where are they at? I'm going to guess Indiana or Illinois. Let me see. Cummins Engines is headquartered in Columbus, Indiana. Okay. Now, Cummins, you know what? I mean, the trucking industry is struggling right now. We talked to a guy very much tied to the industry when we were in Sarasota. He didn't talk very highly about the industry right now and the struggles they're having. Trying to make a profit. And Cummins has not been a very good, over the last 10 years, 6.5%. It's better than most, but I would give it average. In fact, the performance grade I have is a C, okay? So it basically tracks the market, and Cummins is not having a good day today after this report. It's down 2.8%. Not one that we own or are interested in. Good company, though. Excellent company. We'll be right back. To the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Did you ever wonder, as you go down the cereal aisle at your local supermarket, how much Kellogg makes and whether or not it's been a good investment over the years? I can remember in the day when a lot of the sitcoms and whatnot were sponsored by Kellogg.
I can't tell you the last time I've seen a Corn Flakes commercial, right?
And Frosted Flakes with Tony the Tiger and all this kind of stuff. I think the Tigers Union sued and for making Tigers look bad and this and that. But anyways. Here's the
sugary
deal.
Sugary Tigers.
Here's the deal. I've always been a Grape Nuts guy. Is that Kellogg's?
Yeah, that's Post. I think that's Post.
Oh, okay.
Actually. Yeah, I think.
Grape Nuts keep your teeth in shape. Your incisors going in the morning. An investment in Kellogg's. Okay, you think, well, everybody eats cereal every morning. It's got to be a good, minus 1% a year over the last 10 years. You can compound that out, and you've lost about 12% or whatever over the last 10 years in the stock. That is not counting the dividend, however. So we do have to give Kellogg of Battle Creek, Battle Creek, Michigan, which we're headed. I don't know where Battle Creek is in relation to Bloomfield Hills. Maybe we'll go visit the plant while we're there. But you know what? It's just zero growth. It's just zero growth. There's just not much more room in that cereal aisle. I noticed I had to really search for Grape Nuts.
I don't think it's
a popular brand anymore.
No, my nostalgia for cereal was, I still remember, the days where it was, where it was real, very sugary, like,
Crunch.
They kept, you got the prizes in the box. I mean, there was, send off for something in the mail.
Wheaties with the athletes on the cover.
Right. Yep,
and,
the Wheaties box. That's right.
My father was a Frosted Flakes guy. He loved that. For dessert, with some fresh raspberries on top. He had good taste.
Oh, well, my grandma always had the pack that had all the little tiny boxes, you know, where you had the variety pack. That was the best. Yeah, that
I
was,
always
that
got was stuck it. With the one that nobody wanted.
Right, exactly. Brand flakes. There you go.
With okay, so anyways, it has not been a very good. Let's just take a look at the dividend yield. I'll bet it's fat. 3.7% dividend yield. Over the last 12 months, you're down 15% on your Kellogg's, while the S&P's up 22%. So that's 3,600 basis point difference. That's not very good. It gets a performance grade of D+. So I don't know what you do. Okay, you've got a big dominant company. You're in every home in America just about. You're in every supermarket in America. But the stock, okay, is... That's one thing. The company is another thing. And without growth, it's just really hard. I mean, now the only thing that can happen is multiple expansion. Their earnings growth over the last 10 years or 5 years has been minus 7% per year. So their earnings peaked a long time ago. It's a non-growth company. But yet, you know, Kellogg's is another one that I see in a lot of portfolios that come to me from other firms. People feel safe owning Tony the Tiger. Now, okay, now let's take a look at, there's a couple other interesting ones. The most shorted stock in the market, as far as I know, it's usually Carvana. And Carvana has really never made a whole lot of money with their used car vending machines. They're out of Tempe, Arizona, which is a suburb of Phoenix. And the shorts are just scrambling for cover today. Carvana reported a profit. This is the GameStop of today, if you ask me, okay? They've all gone to Carvana. And that stock is up 38% today.
Wow.
That is painful if you're a short seller and you have this stock short and you're hoping for a big loss. No, they reported a profit five times normal volume. Now, the big loser today is Fastly, and it's Fastly going down. It's down to $8 a share after being at $136 in 2020. That hot year of 2020 and 2021, this stock got up to $136. Now it's $8.50.
Well,
it's down 34% today.
Wow. And news from another one that would, you know, used to be hot, right? Peloton. They're down
too.
12 or almost 13%. I think their founder and CEO is going to be stepping down. I think they're going to have like another 10% or 15% layoffs. And
if I wrote a
$2.80 on that one.
If I wrote a book on Peloton, it'd be titled "The Anatomy of a Stock Collapse," because it's gone from $171 to $2.81.
Yeah, I mean, at least when I'm getting on that bike, I go nowhere, right? The stock, another, you know, in difference, you're going in reverse, right?
Total collapse. They're trying to save it.
It was $151 in December 28th of 2020.
They also have the clear distinction of never turning a profit prior to being a private a public company, and all the years they've been a public company.
No, right. Yeah.
They've never had a profitable year. But hey, somebody walked away with a lot of bucks back in the 2021.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm sure there's some Peloton multi-millionaires that were in on the deal and founding fathers and et cetera. But anyways, that's how the stock market goes. That's what makes it so interesting. Well, we put everything that we find interesting during this past week in the newsletter every week, along with our macro forecast, which is based on the public numbers that are out there on the street right now, and using a little bit of logic applied to those. We look at the technical analysis, which is really critical right now. I would say that technical analysis is one of the most important things. Sometimes it's earnings, sometimes it's sentiment, sometimes it's relative strength. Right now we don't have a lot of relative strength in the market. We have a lot of relative weakness. I only have 171 B-plus stocks. I had 700, 800 several months ago. So that's how weak the market is right now, and that's why technical analysis is at the top of my list. Having said that, I've got 524, about 600 charts to look at between now and about 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. If you'd like to get 2 free weeks of the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com, to set up an appointment with us. If you own Kellogg's of Battle Creek in your portfolio, you should be saying why. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.